Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Joe Cunningham, and this thing should be dialing him shortly, I would hope. Okay, it says that it failed, so let me try again. And just bear with me for a moment. I don't know what happened here. Hopefully we will get a hold of him. Joe Cunningham. It seems to be going through now. Sorry about any listeners that are listening.
Hello.
Joe. Hi, this is Mac.
This is me. Mac, how
are
you doing?
Hi, me. We're live on the air.
Can you hear me okay? Oh, great.
Yes, I can. And you can hear
Thanks
me okay,
for having
too?
Me on the, I can. Yeah. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay. Well, this is funny. There's already a caller. So if you don't mind, I'm going to pick up the call.
Oh, for sure. And yeah.
We'll see who that is. We didn't even get to say anything yet. Hello, caller. Caller, are you there? Hello, caller. Caller, are you there? They hung up. Okay. And you're my witness that I actually answered that call, just in case they call back later and say that I never answered. Okay. So, like I was just telling people, my guest is Joe Cunningham. He's a filmmaker from, I believe now you're living in Liverpool, New York.
Yes. Yes, right near Syracuse, New York. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where you grew up, isn't that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so, well, tell us about growing up in Syracuse and, like, when you caught the acting bug and whatever else you want to include in there.
Sure, yeah. I grew up in Syracuse on the south and on the east side. I went to Catholic school. I got involved in my first little blip of showbiz was I was a tap dancer. We had the extracurricular activities for school, and I did dance and gymnastics, and then I did tap dancing, and I really loved that. I was like the only boy in my group. But and then I did the lights for the plays that they had, the church choir did. Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, and I did the lights in the backstage. They were all manual, so I would, like, make storms and, like, do the spotlights. I think I was, like, 10, 11 years old, but that was really exciting. Then I was homeschooled for a number of years, and I was involved with a boys' club. That was, like, how my parents got us to socialize with other kids. And every week we would meet, and we would do these little virtue skit. So I like basically directed improv with them. And I was always obsessed with movies. My dad would bring home a movie every Friday night, and if you were good, you got to watch it. And mainly they were like religious movies that I didn't really like. But they, every once in a while, he would bring home like On the Waterfront or, you know, Ben-Hur or, you know, I got really into Disney animated movies. Like, I remember the Robin Hood where he's, you know, the fox. And that was, like, I was obsessed with that. And I drew, like, incessantly. And so I wanted to be a Disney animator. And then finally, when I was, like, a young teenager, he brought home, you know, Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And after that, I wanted to be Steven Spielberg. And I wanted to be, you know, Harrison Ford. So that was like, that was the bug, you know, for me, that I wanted to be an actor and I wanted to, you know, make films, and I would write down all these ideas for movies and things like that. And then one thing led to another, and I didn't apply to film school later in life. I got denied from every place I applied. But I ended up getting a degree in creative writing, and I went into marketing because I thought that would be an easy way to make money off of writing creatively, which was a terrible idea, and I failed miserably. But I learned but I learned that wasn't what I wanted to do. So I went back into like blue collar jobs, and so I wouldn't have to take my work home with me. And since then, I had the creative energy because I wasn't using my laptop and my fingers, you know, to write some stuff for a living. I would get home and then have creative energy to then be like, okay, what do I want to write? What's the thing? Without somebody having, without having to write for somebody else or getting paid to write somebody else's ideas, what are the things that I want to do? And so I finally started to write. I had written in college and of course for my degree and other things, but I started to like blog and write little short stories and screenplays, and I got involved locally with a screenwriting group, and a couple of us wrote a little short film called Under the Mercy, which we made into a short film, and we got into festivals back in 2019. We filmed it in 21. It got into, I think, 7 festivals, and it won 2 awards.
Excuse me, I hate to interrupt you, but there's a caller.
Okay.
Hopefully this one will answer me.
Oh, that's
hello,
okay.
Caller.
Hi, it's Ed.
Yeah, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, how you guys doing?
Ed, how you doing?
Good, Joe.
Thank you for making this opportunity happen. You're great.
Well, thanks for letting me be involved. This is a nice project. This is a nice movie.
Oh, thank
you.
It's an honor to have you.
Since Ed is here, well, go ahead and finish what you were saying, if you remember where you were at, Joe, and then once you're done with that thought, then we'll get into that film, since Ed was also involved in it. So if you remember where you were at, go ahead and finish that thought.
Sure, I'll tie it up real quick. So we did Under the Mercy, and then after that I got this idea to do this movie called The Sentinel, about a veteran with severe PTSD trying to take care of his son. And so I just hunkered down, and I spent a while researching and just putting some ideas together and getting the script together. And then in June of 2021, I started self-producing it, and with a couple of friends of mine helping as crew. And then just this past January, I think, we shot, oh no, time flies, I think it was March, we shot a huge, boxing scene for the movie, with Ed was played a mobster in that scene, and it was our biggest scene yet. I think we had like 60, 70 people involved in that scene, and it was really exciting. So, and Ed is such a great actor, he's been in so many things, it's just great having him around. And I actually made him an associate producer as well, because he brought so many people to the movie, and he really saved the scene. He brought the other boxing coach and the other boxer, and half a dozen other actors to be in that scene. And he's already promoted the film a lot more than even I have. So he's just great to have in the film. We have almost 200 people involved in the movie now, and it's about 3/4 of the way done, so we're hoping to finish shooting in the fall, and then I have post-production and editing and, you know, scoring with my friend Dave Welsh, and yes, anyway, that's the long and short of it.
Okay, well, Ed, why don't you, while you're there, why don't you tell us about your particular part and how it came about, and, you know, whatever information you want to share with us.
Oh, Joe reached me out on Facebook and asked me if I wanted to do a mob scene in a movie. And I said, sure, I always wanted to be in a mob scene. I went up for a long time. And down there, I got a couple of people from Watertown. I got Joe Pep from Watertown, a boxing coach. And I got my friend, I grew up with him, Robert Korzak from Watertown, and we got down there. We played mobster. I enjoyed that scene. It's like the gut, like Goodfellas. You know what I mean? It was nice. I loved it.
Yes.
Mo was a good
actor. I designed it after Raging Bull, but yes, Goodfellas as well. You were phenomenal. You guys were great. You were so believable.
Yeah, thanks. That felt good. I love that. Thank you very much for being part of that scene.
Well, thank you for being in it. You were great. I love the whole mob squad there. You guys were terrifying. It was really exciting.
Well, it was fun. I loved it. Yeah. It was good.
Well, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't realize anybody was talking.
Oh, go ahead. You're good.
Oh, all I was going to say is I didn't know if you had anything else to say, Ed, and if you do, go ahead. But I was just going to say, even after you're done talking, you can stay throughout the whole show if you like and interject some comments or whatever. But whatever you want to do is fine with Joe and I.
Okay. I can't wait to, if you have anything else come up, the next scene's on there for the other scene you got coming up. But get involved with that one, too.
Yes, we do have a scene towards the end. I'll be bugging you for sure to get as many extras as we can. I don't want to divulge too much about it for spoiler purposes, towards the end, there's a bigger scene that we'll need a lot of people for, definitely.
Okay. No, that's okay. I'm sorry, Ed. you were saying it was fun. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it was fun playing that scene. Like stepping into a mobster movie. Like a, you know what I mean? Like a stepping into one. A character.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you're good at whatever you play. So I'm sure that Joe is correct that you're scary, which is what you're supposed to be.
That was fun playing a character. I love playing things like that. I rather play background character. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. You reminded me of Paulie Gutierrez on The Sopranos, who I believe was a mobster in real life.
Nope.
I sent the group a bunch of pictures of what I was going for, and we were going for like a modern day Sopranos. But with those characters. But the scene was designed after Scorsese's Raging Bull. There's that mob element that's trying to influence the fights. And we have a character, my friend Lawrence Gabriel, he's a professional boxer. And so he, in the movie, I used a lot of my real friends to play my character's friends. And Lawrence becomes my character's mentor. And Lawrence is a veteran as well. So I made Lawrence he's in charge of the group therapy group that for veterans that my character has to go to in the script. So, and then my character kind of shadows him and trains with him at the boxing gym. And then, you know, there's that mob element because there's a fight coming up that Lawrence is in, and his coach, I don't want to divulge too much, but there's some corrupt dealings there. So it's pretty cool. I didn't intend for it to have a mob element, but we had to rewrite the entire second act based on our circumstances. We had an actor drop out. But as a lot of filmmakers say, the obstacle is the way. Greta Gerwig said that, and Guillermo del Toro as well, that whenever there's a problem in filmmaking, like, that is the way that you have to do it. That becomes the story. That becomes the creativity goes in that direction. So it actually, I think it's actually a better scene. We have a phenomenal actor as well. His name is David Gilmour. He plays Lawrence's boxing coach, and he's based on an amalgamation of two different characters in real life. One of them I knew, and the other one is deceased. And they ran a gym that I used to go to, and his character broke his back as a blue-collar worker and was prescribed Oxycontin, and then his doctor takes him off it because he's an addict, and then his life kind of spirals downhill, and he has to go to the black market to continue to get drugs, and that's where he gets tied up into the mob. So David Gilmour plays that role spectacularly, and also he came up, I originally designed the story to kind of go in one direction, and he was like, no, that's absolutely wrong. We have to do this. And he really saved the movie. I don't want to divulge too much again, but but it's a great little subplot that really makes an imprint on the main character. And when I was designing the story, I use index cards and I paste them all over my walls with different ideas for the movie, like whether it be a plot point, a character, or a line for the film. And I organize them on my kitchen wall during COVID according to the plot and then like six different subplots. So this is becomes one of the biggest subplots in the film, and it really culminates in that scene that Ed was in. So it's pretty exciting. I don't want to divulge too much because I want people to see the film, but it's pretty exciting.
Well, yeah, you want to not give away too much because then there's that feeling
right.
that, okay, well, they've already heard about it, so they don't need to watch it.
Right, spoiler alert, yeah. But it was really beautiful to see. I mean, we had 70 people come out. We're a very low-budget film. You know, I self-finance and self-produce. I'm really lucky to have a really awesome crew. James Marlowe is my cinematographer. He's a local filmmaker here in Syracuse and award-winning. He won several awards, one being at the Syracuse Film Festival for his adventure films. He kind of makes like an amalgamation of Indiana Jones and Monty Python, this character called Trent Lockwood, which you can watch his films on YouTube. But he's such a great cinematographer, and he's shot almost all of the film with me. My friend Sally LaMonaco, she went to film school. She's my assistant director. I have a second AD, Laura Steiser, who's also an actress in the film, Sally as well. But yes, we have a really tight-knit crew, and we all help each other produce each other's films. It's kind of like the dream scenario where we're all making each other's films. We're all very low budget, but we're all kind of come together. And on that boxing scene in particular, we must have had, you know, a dozen crew and another, you know, 50 extras and actors there. And it was just really exciting to see such a incredible scene, you know, come together with all these people coming out just to be a part of the movie, to be a part of the art right here in Syracuse. And Ed was such an instrumental part of that because I had some people drop out at the last minute. And if I didn't have Ed and his friend John Pepe there with his boxer from Watertown, you know, it wouldn't have worked out. I always have a backup plan for the backup plan and a way to shoot it, you know, as minimally as possible so we can get it done. But it was so epic because we had both fighters and we had them up there, you know, with two different really talented hair and makeup people, Dakota Wayne and Destiny Reigns. They were going up in between the rounds to bloody them up and bruise them up, and it was really exciting to see all that really come together as an epic scene.
That all sounds interesting. And Ed is just so great. He's great at helping people and doing his own thing that he does. He's a really, really great actor. And I know you agree with
yes.
me. Yeah.
No, yes, absolutely. And he's just like, you know, I really love his style because he sent me a couple of different pictures of different costumes and different ideas for his character. And he really goes into like the details of his character. And I love how he plays it too, because he just kind of, you see him and he's the guy, you know what I mean? Like that was the first time I worked with him. I would cast him for everything that I do because he's just fully committed to the role and fully, you know, that's what you need. When you're making a film, you need the suspension of disbelief from the audience. So you need everybody on set to be fully committed to their character, to come up looking, you know, fully in costume. And just when the camera rolls, when they say action, just for everyone to be fully invested. And that's Ed. Like, he's great. So he was in Succession. He was in Manodrome, which they shot here in Syracuse. Like, he's
mm-hmm.
been in a ton of movies,
yeah,
and he has
good.
A ton of experience. And he's very humble. Like, he's not going to tell you that he's, like, a big shot or something. He's like, but he's a great, he's had tons of experience and he's just a great actor and I love having him around. I hope to cast him in a bigger role in my next film because he's got talent. Like I like working with him.
Well, thank
you,
John.
Oh, there you go,
appreciate
Ed.
That. I appreciate it. Thank
Absolutely.
You, guys. I appreciate that. I've been acting since 2004. I did five SAG films. All the ones are all independent films. I really do independent films, more close net independent films. And I love acting. People go, why you act for nothing? I go, I love it. I did all these years for acting.
I'd
rather be an extra in a movie because you'd be any part of that movie and still get a FaceTime, still get a line. Because you go for like a lead part, forget it. There's too much competition.
What was it like doing that scene with Jesse Eisenberg in Man of Drum? I still have to see that. That looks really good.
He's a quiet guy. It was pretty good. They had they had a kid and a father, and this one scene must come out of the bathroom. And they had the camera guys in there too. They cut them off. But that was they shot that about 6-7 times just at one scene.
Okay.
It was like a dream come true to meet a famous movie star like that, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, he's such a great actor. End of the Tour, he's phenomenal. I really love that movie. And then of course he got nominated for The Social Network. He's so good in that.
And
he's Lex Luthor. Sorry, go ahead. You stared him down in that scene. What was that like?
I was looking in the eyes. She said she shuts off in the face and looked him in the eyes. I had headphones on. I play Lancino, skinny guy with headphones on. But after I walked by him, he said something. I didn't hear it. It was in the movie. It was part of the scene, but he said that's going to walk by, yeah. I can't say that on the air.
Oh, shit.
You got to watch the movie.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch the movie. I feel bad I haven't seen it up till now, but, like, I've only heard good things. Adrian Brody, too. Like, what an actor. That's a great combination.
Oh, yeah. I was standing next to him, too. I got the whole one-day shoot, all the lines for that one-day shoot. I kept them.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess that. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, those
Go
two
ahead.
Are some of the best.
Oh, yes,
they
are.
They are.
Yeah, I'd much rather be in a movie with, like, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay, Joe. It's your show. You go ahead with what you were saying.
Oh, no, it's your show. So I love independent film because it focuses on, like, the art of film, like how, like, film as an art form, and those two actors are, like, some of the best ever. You know, they might not be in big action movies or whatever. I mean, they are Lex Luthor, Jesse Eisenberg, and Adrian Brody was in a couple, like, King Kong and the Predators film as well. But, like, they're such top-notch, like, Adrian Brody and The Pianist and everything. That's why I love independent film, because I feel like, back in the 40s, the studio owners and directors, they were about the art. They loved movies. And Scorsese said then once they sold them to, or they were bought by those big conglomerates, for a time the conglomerates let artists do what they wanted to do, like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and Coppola and Polanski and all those types of directors. But then in the modern time, like, it's gone way more towards blockbusters, which can be fun. Like, who doesn't love a fun, like, action movie or something in at times? But now it's, like, so hard to get, a Chinatown made or a Godfather made. And those are – I really love those movies. I mean, you can argue what's better. But I love independent film. Like, I love seeing movies get made around here and – you know, and the more the better, because it makes more actors and artists come out of the woodwork, and it's just so exciting. It's not a competition, I always say. It's a rising tide raises all ships. So I always get excited when I see independent films, because it brings the art in the community up, and it brings it up, you know, in the entertainment world as well. You know, so it's so exciting to see. And now it's so easy to make a movie. I was just watching a video on Instagram of Chris Rock talking about, like, there's really no excuse to make your movie now, because technology makes it so easy. You can make a movie on your iPhone. you know, Tangerine by Sean Baker was shot entirely on the iPhone 5, and that movie made it to, I think, Cannes. I can't remember the film festival, but it's the other one, Sundance. And it's just, it's such a phenomenal movie, and he's such a great filmmaker. But there's really no excuse. Like, if you're out there and you want to make a movie, you can, you know. And there's people, friends of yours, or if you put it out on Facebook that you're looking for actors, you know, people will come and be a part of your movie. And as long as you're passionate about it, and as long as it's something that you really love, that'll be contagious, and people, great people like Ed, will come and be a part of it. And you won't be without a million and one difficulties, but at least you're doing something that you love. Like, all the difficulties really they're not a really drop in the ocean, because, you know, you're doing something that you love and you're making your art, and it's so exciting. And I recommend it for anybody, any young aspiring filmmaker or filmmaker who's listening, just to do that, and, you know, to do your dream, you know.
Yeah, I think that Ed should make his own film. What
Absolutely.
Do you think, Ed?
Yes.
That'd be nice. Something like that, yeah.
I would love to see Ed in a lead role. I think he would be fantastic.
Depends what kind of lead role, though.
I see you as like a blue collar guy, and something, you know, is going wrong, and you gotta, like, it's like a heavy drama or something like that. I can see you doing that, because you're like a very down to earth, salt of the earth guy in the best way, you know. And I think you would be great as that. I've always been, sorry to hijack the conversation here, but I've always been in love with, ever since college, with Charles Dickens, and, you know, Oliver Twist, Tale of Two Cities, and he's always writing. He's writing his own experience, because he lived through that in London, kind of the best and the worst of, mainly the worst of the times. And I've always been interested in stories like that, like The Diamond in the Rough. You have some of the best people you've ever met are the people that get looked over. You know, the people that live in the poor neighborhoods who are working their fingers off, and I just find, like, the best stories there. And I've always, my films are kind of always that, you know, Tale of Two Cities, you know, John Carlton, someone who's a drunk who nobody thinks he's going to do something great, and then he ends up doing one of the most heroic things ever done in fiction. And I think, you know, that's Ed. He's like someone who might get looked over if you walked by him on the street, but he's like just a genuine good dude, and I can see that as like a film. You know, he's that guy. That would be exciting.
Well, appreciate that.
So I'll put
that,
you
right
in
much.
That. I'm going to put you in one of my films as that guy.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks for calling.
Well,
appreciate that.
Oh, sorry about interrupting you guys.
No,
I just wanted to ask you something it might be fresh in people's memories, because you just talked about it, Trent Lockwood. So you did Trent Lockwood and the Tsar's Legacy, and you acted
in
it,
James
Marlowe, I guess. Yeah, and I got this off of IMDb, and it just struck me as funny, so I just wanted to mention it. You're listed as the assistant director of butt slapping.
Yes. So these are comedy films, and I said to James that the only way that he had to add that for me as a credit. So it's my I'm most proud of that credit more than any other credit, and it's just. So we were filming, it was probably my best experience filming a movie, or at least my most fun. We filmed for a day out in the woods in the wintertime, and it takes place in Siberia in the 1950s, I think, or late 1940s. And so I play Rasputin's nephew. And again, it's like, it's a combination of like an Indiana Jones and a Monty Python. So it's a comedy, but it's also an adventure film. So I'm a villain, and I show up to, you know, steal the artifact from the character, from the lead, Trent Lockwood. And anyway, but so there's this, it'll be coming out at in the film festivals this year, but also hopefully as well, or after as well, it'll go on YouTube so everybody will be able to see it. But my character hypnotizes Trent, and then Sally LaMonaco plays Natasha. She's the other, you could call her a villain character. And so in order for, James wrote into the script that Sally smacks him on the butt to be able to see if he's really hypnotized or not. So I had to direct that part. I was behind the camera just kind of pushing stuff and go because James is acting and so is Sally, but I wasn't in that shot. So she didn't do it. She just kind of hit him, and she didn't really hit him. She pulled back. So I was like, wait a second. I'm going to direct this butt-slapping scene. So we had to do it. We had to do it like 40 times.
Yeah,
and it was so funny because...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So, and we had just met Sally like a couple weeks before, and we're great friends now. Her, James, and I are great friends, and we help each other. But like, we were just kind of breaking the ice with each other during that scene. And like, I kept telling, like, it was the honest truth that, you know, it just didn't look good because she was pulling away before she actually hit him. And so I had to be like, no, you actually have to smack him. So we just like did like 40 takes. But it finally worked, and it looks phenomenal in the film. And James isn't listening to this, so I'll mention it, and I'm going to give it to him next week. But I actually got the shot of him with Sally, like, hitting his butt, and I blew it up on canvas, on a giant canvas. So I printed that out for him, and I'm going to give it to him in a couple weeks, so it's going to be fun. But that's the kind of fun. That's the kind of fun that we have, like, on set. Like, it's just when you're with people that you trust and that you love, and you can, like, you know, do. I wouldn't have crossed the line and had Sally done something disrespectful or anything like that. But we needed to get it just right for the in all seriousness for the scene. But then it just became like a big joke after, which was really fun. So I told James that he had to put that exactly on IMDb, so it was funny. Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch it now just so I can see what you were talking about. I think that'll be funny.
It
would be funny anyway.
It's a great film. James is such a fantastic filmmaker. He's really the one that, one of the many, but he's one of the main ones that inspired me to be an independent filmmaker because he made a film, his first Trent Lockwood film, he made with absolutely nothing in his basement and around his backyard. And he won at the Syracuse Film Festival for it. And it's in black and white, and it's a silent film. And it's filmed visually, but then he adjusts it with the editing so that the it looks like it was made in like the 1920s and 1930s in the silent film era. And it's just... it's so well done. And our friend Dave Welsh, he's an amazingly talented composer, and he also did the music and sound for Under the Mercy, and he won honorable mention at the Prague Film Festival for it, for his score. But he scores all the Trent Lockwood films. It's incredible. He has a whole setup at his studio, just like Hans Zimmer, and he has world-renowned musicians playing. They play and they record all their different notes, and he's able to play through them like on a keyboard, so that he's able to put compose and put a whole orchestra of sound onto a film score, which is incredible. It's just, you should do an interview with him as well. He's just such a talented composer, and we're so lucky to have him. He's going to do the score for The Sentinel, and he's already, we go back and forth with different ideas and inspirations and songs all the time, but he's just an artist. I don't know how he does it. My brother is a musician as well, and he just sent me another song today. And those are the real artists right there, because, like, I might get my inspiration from the music, but I don't know where they get it from, because they're just incredible, you know. It's great to be able to work with these people.
Sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. I thought you were done talking. But Blog Talk Radio has that little thing where the, and I'm sure you've noticed it yourself, that there's like pauses, and then so somebody might be talking, but you don't know they're talking because there's like a pause there, and it messes up the sound
delay.
A little bit.
Yeah, I saw that. That's okay. I'm not used to it. I mean, you're a professional. I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I try to be sort of professional. I don't consider myself a professional, but I try to be as professional as possible. And some people, it bothers them a lot, I guess. But most of the time, everybody's okay. They're like, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. And the funny thing is, it does. It happens with big-time things. Like, I was watching CNN one time where that was going on. So when they were doing an interview, and I was thinking, well, that makes me feel better. Because if it happens with a big conglomerate thing like CNN where the sound keeps going out, then I don't feel so bad when I'm just working on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, I know what you mean. Sometimes the when we're filming, sometimes the mistakes are the best things that happen. Like we were filming, I kicked myself remembering this one example because I yelled cut before we kept going. But we were filming in a diner, a mom's diner it's called, in Westcott in Syracuse. And the lady who runs it, she's just so nice. Her name is Eva Essie. And we were filming a scene where my character meets the girl who plays my girlfriend in the film. It's like the first time they meet. And I'm having breakfast with my ex-stepdaughter and her girlfriend and my son. And then she's the waitress. Her name is Nazarene, and she's such a phenomenal actress. She's so good in the movie. Anyway, she comes up, and as she was coming up, she's coming around kind of filling everybody's coffees. And we were all like, you know, we had yelled action and we were filming. And I go to put ketchup on my home fries, and the ketchup bottle farted. You know, it made that farting noise. And we all started laughing, like, uncontrollably. And I was so embarrassed that I yelled cut. But, like, I hate myself because that was the perfect – that would have been the perfect in for the film, you know what I mean? Sometimes the mistakes – that you make are like the best thing to make it natural, like to make the film connect to real life, you know, to feel like real life.
Well,
we had a scene earlier. Absolutely. I'm still kicking myself. I have it as a blooper, but I yelled cut, so I can't like actually use it because it's butchered. But there's sometimes like when you make a mistake, those are the best things because it brings you back into reality. You have to like figure out how to move forward. There's one scene where I'm bringing the groceries in from the car with my son. The film is centered around like this father-son relationship. And that's one of the reasons why I was actually writing another film called Midnight Rider after the Allman Brothers song. And I put that project on hold when I got this idea because my son, when I wrote the film, he was 6 or 7. Now he's 11. And we're almost done filming, so it's become like a Linklater's Boyhood where he's growing up. But anyway, so I'm tangenting, but I'm coming back to the point. We're bringing the groceries in, and then my son kind of goes off script, and he goes off into like he runs away into the yard, like hiding behind a tree. And so when my character goes to like find him, as you know, his father, I can't find him. And James is still rolling. So, like, we have this whole scene where I get up there, and as his actual father, I'm like, oh, my God, where is he? And the footage is so great. It's, like, it's literally one of my favorite parts of the movie because it's real, you know. And so those, like, natural things that you weren't planning, like, those become, like, those gems. Like, they become gold when you're making a movie. Like, when you rehearse something, you're like, we're going to do this, then we're going to do that. And then it comes out just like that. Sometimes that's the worst thing, you know, because you kind of want it to go off the rails. At least I do. I love improvised acting and filmmaking. And when something, you have the idea of the story, you're getting the story across, but then something strange happens and you still roll with it. And to be honest, my son is like the best actor in the movie. He's just so natural and he's conscious of what he's doing, but then he kind of lets himself go and it's just – it's so fun to work with him and exciting. And, yeah, I could keep talking about that. I made this movie kind of as a time capsule for him so that when I am old, I can watch it and remember us when we were younger, but also so that he can watch it when he's older and I'm gone and he can understand. I have severe PTSD in real life, and so I use this story of a veteran. I'm not a veteran, but my brother is, and so I kind of made this amalgamation of several different characters, my brother and other veterans that I've interviewed. You know, so this father going through PTSD and struggling to take care of his son. And so that's really the heart of the story. And so it's really precious, and it's something that I don't take for granted, you know, that we're able to do this together. And I'm going to be sad when it's over, when we're done filming. I'll be happy when the movie gets edited and comes out, but it's such a joy to do this movie, like, with my son, you know, and it's a real honor, and it's a passion, you know, it's awesome.
No, I'd be interested in seeing your son's acting, so I'll have to check some of these things out.
Yes, he's great. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I want you to finish your thought, and then I'll say what I was going to say.
Okay, sure. So I hope to, with Under the Mercy, it was a short film, so we did submit it to probably 30 different film festivals, and it got into maybe, I think, 7 to 9 of them, and we ranked in a couple, and we won in two. But there's not, like, my good filmmaker friend Ron Bonk, so there's not a market for people to buy short films. So we released it, we self-distributed on DVD, and then I ended up putting it on YouTube, so it could just be out there and people can view it for free. You can go to YouTube and search Under the Mercy and watch the whole film. It's really good. I made it with Peter Mahan, and Eric Scott co-wrote it with me, and Peter directed, I produced, and James Marlowe shot it. It's really phenomenal, and I'm proud of it. But when this is a feature film, and there is a market for feature films, though I don't have my hopes too high, so I hope to, obviously I'm gonna premiere here in Syracuse at the Palace Theater like we did for Under the Mercy. There's a great local theater here that's kind of the old style theater, and the people there are just so very nice. And it was one of the best days of my life premiering the last film there, and I've been kind of looking forward to, not kind of, I've been very much looking forward to premiering the film on the big screen there. And then we're going to submit to as many film festivals as we possibly can, and hopefully get some sort of interest from a distributor or someone like that. But worst case scenario, I'll self-distribute again. And Under the Mercy is also at the Soundgarden here in Syracuse. They were really nice to carry our DVDs over there. But I'll find a way to stream it online or to, distribute it so everybody can see it. But it's just such a labor of love, and everybody – I have a really phenomenal supporting cast. I said Lawrence Gabriel, his girlfriend, fiance Sarah Shannon, David Gilmour, I already mentioned. Laura Steiser is phenomenal. She plays my shrink secretary, and she has like a phenomenal performance in there. Maria Mukaria, she's in it. She plays another veteran at the group therapy, and she has, like, this great performance. Jenny Russo plays my son's mother, and she's really great in the film. She's a phenomenal actress. My character's girlfriend in the film. I'm running down the list now. Yes, there's so many great actors in the movie and so many great performances. I'm always surprised in the best way. I mean, I cast these people because they're great actors, but I'm surprised when it's like, oh, I wrote this and we're making this film, and look at this Hollywood level performance, this, like, you know, golden age of Hollywood in, you know, level performance in my movie. And I hope I can do them justice in, you know, putting it all together, and so people can really see, you know, how great these performances are that the story comes through. It's really exciting. I'm more excited than anybody to see the movie, when it comes together.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't you be excited? It's your film, and you want to see it, and you want everybody else to see it, and you want them to be entertained, and with the Sentinel to get something worthwhile out of it.
Right. And for me, it's not about money or it's not about notoriety. I was actually kind of, not because of you or Ed or anyone, intimidated to come on the show today because, I haven't achieved anything of note in my mind. Like, the film isn't complete or anything. But I'm just honored to talk about it for the sake of, I believe in the project. And I'm so proud of everybody who's given blood, sweat, and tears, to the film already. And, I'm really excited to, when everything comes together, to see it come home, Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Joe, you ought to have a prayer up here in Watertown, New York, because we got a Fort Drum up here. And I bet you a lot of military people would like to see this film.
Oh yeah, that would be great. I know there's that would be really, really cool. I know there was an organization, Clear Path for Veterans. I'm gonna reach out to them when we get the film completed and try to get see if they want to advertise it to their guys to come to the premiere. I'm not gonna charge for anyone to come to the premiere because I'm also featuring Sally LaMonaco's film, which is a Spider-Man fan film. It's called The Amazing MJ, and she plays Mary Jane Watson, Spider-Man's girlfriend. So it's that whole story from Mary Jane's perspective. And legally, as we can't make money off of a fan film, so it's just donations only for the premiere. But I'm also just really honored to be able to show that movie, which is coming along really well. I play a villain in that film as well, which is so exciting. I've been prepping that role for a while. And also I'm going to show James's movie, Trent Lockwood and the Tsar's Legacy, at that, just as a thank you for them, for all that they do for making my film. I just want to be able to show their movies with mine as well. But yes, I would love to have, as many people watch the movie. And I hope that veterans will be able to connect to it. That'll be like a sign of authenticity if they can watch it and feel it and resonate with it. There are some actual veterans. I cast a couple of veterans in the group therapy scene. It's like half actors and half real veterans. And we have there's a moment in that group therapy scene where, they're sharing their experiences, kind of like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or The Wire. They have those group therapy scenes, and that's kind of what I modeled it after. You have a little moment with each veteran, and they're telling a little bit of their story, and our actors are making it up. But then we have a couple of veterans who have really seen combat, or they've seen, things that have given them PTSD, and they're talking about it. And that footage is so profound. It's so powerful. And when I watch it, we have so much footage, so I have to cut it down to like the golden nuggets, but I really want to do honor to them by showing that. And then overall, the story is about a guy who's struggling with PTSD, which I am in real life, but I'm not a veteran. So if the film comes out and those guys see it and they can be like, well, that resonates with me, then I'll know, we hit a home run, Really, really, it just has to be good for me. I'm the audience, when I make a movie. But yeah, I want other people to see it and resonate with it as well.
I can find your place up here. We can show it. My son-in-law is a veteran.
Oh, yeah.
He was 20 years in the Army. He ended up with staff sergeant. And Iraq, four times. Seen those place. But, yeah. I said, find a nice place up here so I can show it. Nice.
Oh, that would be great. See, Ed is always helping promote and set things up for the movie. He's just such a great resource and such a great help. I really appreciate that. there's actually a veteran. I modeled the character after my friend's husband. He was my character's a ex-sniper, and he did 2 tours in Afghanistan. And it's, I don't know how many tours my friend's husband did, but he was a sniper in Afghanistan as well. And so it's kind of, I've kind of modeled it after him, after a little bit of my brother, and, you know, my own experience. And I interviewed half a dozen veterans to try to get some of their experience in as well, to kind of shape the character as well.
Joe, if you don't mind, because we're down to less than 10 minutes, if we could give Ed just a little bit of airtime so that he can tell the listeners if he's got anything coming up. So, Ed, do you have anything coming up?
Yes, I do. I've got a thing coming from Michelle Dean. Ian Barton production in Syracuse called Escape. And we're still filming that in Syracuse up in Watertown, New York. We got a couple of scenes up here in July. One scene in July, one day shoot for that one. And I think that's about it. That was Escape. So far.
Okay. And and I know about this, so I just want to explain it to the people. It's EX Escape, because it's escape,
right.
Something like escaping an X.
That
right? Don't I have that right?
You got that right. Yeah, I got that. Yeah, like escape to somebody. Yeah, you got that right. We shot time up here in Watertown, New York. We used a warehouse. It looked pretty real. We got a famous actor involved into a scene. He was shot down in Syracuse. A well-known actor. I don't know if Michelle can say his name or not. It's hard to say.
When you're not sure if you can say their name or not, it's usually best just not to say it.
Yeah, I didn't have the necklace, but it's a famous actor that's involved. He's been in a lot of movies. Real nice guy in life, real person. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's nice. I'm glad you got stuff coming up, Ed. Is there anything else that you want to mention? We've got like 8 minutes left, so I think Joe can spare another minute or two for you.
I was thinking with Tyrone Jackson. He's got Tyrone Jackson, All Grown Up Entertainment, Syracuse. I'm going to be in part 4 of No Such Thing as Loyalty. That's Undercover Cop again. I was in a movie called Family we shot down there last year. That came out the same time as the one with Jesse Eisenberg. It came out last year on November 17th. I play Club Patriot. But like Joe said, independent films are great. I love independent films. They're great. Like One Big Family. You make plus like make new friends.
Oh, I agree. I mean, independent movies and even like the really low budget or no budget, but because the money doesn't really matter, because I've seen big-budget movies, and I know that you both have seen this yourselves, big-budget movies that really, you know, they come out like they spent that much money, and that's not even good as a no-budget movie. And then there are no-budget movies that come out really great.
Yeah. No, I wish they'd do these big-budget movies. If it wasn't for the background extras, there'd be no scene. Why don't they invite the background extras, they want to go to the red carpet. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for them, there'd be no scene for the new character. I don't get that. You know what I mean?
Well,
right?
I think you're exactly right. You're exactly right, Ed.
Yeah. If it wasn't for me, it was the background. We'll make that the head character look fine. A well-known actor.
Well, sometimes... No, I'm sorry, Ed. Go ahead.
You're good. What were you
going to
say?
Well, all I was going to say was that sometimes those actors, you know, like whether you want to call them extras or background or whatever, or they just have like a scene in the movie, and yet they're like not given any notoriety for some reason, even though their part is very integral to the movie itself. And a good example is Schindler's List, and I'm sure you've both seen it, But the part where that little girl, it's done in black and white, and, of course, there's a reason for that. And it's done in black and white except for that one part where the little girl in red is going across the screen because she's being taken to, you know, to be killed. And as she's going, you're watching her because there's no way to not watch her because she's in red and that everything else is in black and white. But yet she didn't really receive any notoriety at all for that. And she was the main thing in that particular scene.
That's true. On High Fletcher, too, Harry, notice if you go towards the end for the credits, there's no credits for the background extras. But there is for when you do independent films.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I've noticed that because since I was a kid, I've watched credits. The main reason is because I have family members that are in the business, and I have friends that are in the business, and so I'm always looking to see if I know the person. Oh, hey, yeah, I know that person. Yeah, I know that person, too. And especially when you're a kid, you get a big kick out of that. So I'm one that will stay and watch all the credits. I don't leave before the credits are done.
No, no.
I don't mean to cut anybody off, but we've only got 4 minutes. So first I'm going to ask Ed, try not to say too long because we only have 4 minutes. But if you have anything that you want to say in like a minute or so.
No, I appreciate you getting us on the show. I appreciate Joel getting involved in this movie. I appreciate it. Joel can talk now. Thank you, Joel. I appreciate it.
Okay, Joe, he handed it over to you, so you've got a little over 3 minutes. Anything that you want to say, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just want to thank you as well. Thank you, Ed, for helping me get this opportunity to talk on the show and promote the film, and also for being in my film and everything you've done for it. I'm just really grateful for that. And Mac as well, thank you for having me on the show. I'm just really honored to be able to speak about the art that we're doing, and I hope I can do justice to everything that everyone is doing. We have over 200 people working on this film alone, and, it would be impossible without all of those people. So I'm just really honored to be part of this great art, and I hope that we can make many more films together. And as well, if anybody is listening and, you don't have to be a filmmaker, but if you're if there's something that you want to do, do it. Do your dream. One of the reasons why I did this was because I read a quote by Robert De Niro, who's my hero as an actor, and he said, time goes on, so whatever you're going to do, do it now, just do it. So that's it's so difficult, but it's so rewarding, and life is hard anyway. You might as well do what you love. So that's my recommendation to anybody is most of the things that are involved in filmmaking, I don't know how to do. Like, I'm not a technical person, but there's people out there who are, and there's ways to figure out how to do whatever it is that's stopping you from doing your dream. So that's my recommendation to anybody who's trying to do art or do to launch their dream business or to whatever you're going to do. I've been inspired by so many other artists, like my brother, who is a musician, and by James Marlowe, who's a filmmaker, and many other local filmmakers and actors and artists. That's pretty much all I got to say.
Oh,
so thank you,
okay.
Yeah, both of you.
For any of the listeners, you can check out some of his other films. He's got several. I don't really have time to go through them all. He's got like 10 different movies. So if you just go and look up his IMDb under Joe Cunningham, you can find the names of these films. And if you want to contact him, he's under Joe Barnes, which is his character in The Sentinel. That's his character's name. And that's how you can find Joe Cunningham to get in contact with him. for whatever reason. And so now there's only like 60 seconds left. So I'm just going to close out the show. I want to thank my guest, Joe Cunningham, and I also want to thank my special call-in guest, Ed. So thank you very much, guys, and I hope you both have a nice night.
You too. Have a good night. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mac.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Good night.
Night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.